Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. Who better to provide an intelligence briefing than a career intelligence professional, a spy, if you will? His name is Charles Sam Faddis. I'm very proud that he is a regular here at Secure Freedom Radio and a great contributor to the public policy debate through, among other things, his superb platform and magazine.com. He is constantly generating content there that is of incredibly important value, I think, to all of us. And I'm so appreciative of the chance to visit with him a bit about it. His background, as I think those of you who listen to this program know very well, is not only as a career clandestine services officer in the Central Intelligence Agency, he also served as a officer in the United States Army, in the JAG Corps. He was a deputy or an assistant attorney general in the state of Washington. He has been a candidate for Congress. He is a published author of considerable renown, including Beyond Repair, The Decline and Fall of the Central Intelligence Agency. And he is a great friend and ally and colleague at the Committee on the Present Danger, China, as well, among other things. So we're always delighted to have him with us. I could go on and on, but let's let you do some talking. Sam Faddis, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you, sir.
Great to be here as always, Frank. Thank you very much.
I had a terrific interview, chilling, but very, very, very compelling interview yesterday with another Army officer, now retired, Colonel Dr. Lawrence Sellin. And he described in considerable detail, Sam, a biological warfare program that it turns out is not only very active in China, not only spawned, I think it's clear, the COVID-19 virus that has killed over 750,000 Americans and countless others, but that the Chinese are not making much of a secret about, at least in terms of what they publish in Mandarin. And its ambitions are laid out as ultimately the destruction of the United States through tailored viruses designed to kill other ethnicities, including those in this country, and not Chinese, not Han Chinese, at least. You served, among other things, in your time at the Central Intelligence Agency as a man responsible for the biological and other weapons of mass destruction terrorism programs in the agency. That is to say, defending us against such threats. And I wonder, from what I've just said, and what you also know through your own sources, Sam, does this sound right? That the Chinese could be violating their treaty obligations not to have a biological warfare program and actually pursuing it not only aggressively, but brazenly.
Everything about it sounds right to me. I mean, I should add that, you know, before I was named to run CTC's Weapons of Mass Destruction Unit, which is focused on terrorist groups, I mean, the reason I was put in that position was because I had already worked weapons of mass destruction programs of all kinds, including state programs. By that, I mean not terrorist groups, but national programs all over the world. There are times
when you say worked, let me say, just to be clear, countering those programs all over the world.
Correct. I mean, from our perspective, working in the sense of attempting to penetrate those programs and acquire intelligence and educate U.S. government on the exact status of our adversaries' programs.
No, I didn't know that about you. I would have been talking this up with you a lot more before now if I had. But anyway,
well,
what has it taught you about all this?
Spy has to maintain some secrets, Frank.
Yes, indeed.
So, look, the Chinese, I don't care what document they've signed, it doesn't make any difference. they have never walked away from biological warfare. In fact, their doctrine is very explicit that, what they say is that this whole idea of renouncing biological warfare was dreamed up by a bunch of Western powers to help them maintain superiority militarily over the Chinese and other non-European nations. In other words, it's all a construct by us to keep them down and maintain our superiority. And so they have for years and years and years explicitly said that not only will they use them, but they will, they will develop them, they will use them, they will use them early. This is absolutely part of their doctrine. So anybody who thinks that shut down their program, walked away from it, is not paying attention. That's never been true.
You know, interestingly, Sam, what is especially infuriating is the degree to which, as Lawrence Sellin has documented, the Chinese have been exploiting our own technology, our laboratories, our research institutions, our universities, our professoriate, including by infiltrating their own personnel into all of those places to enhance the capabilities of their biological warfare program. And of course, we've spent a lot of time, and you've been writing extensively on the question of Tony Fauci and Peter Daszak and others like them underwriting some of this activity. But they're also, turns out, enabling it here, as I say, through the pretty much open transfer of know-how, if not technology, from these kinds of outfits in our country to this biological warfare program. Whether it's that they've been literally getting away with murder and violating their treaty obligations, or whether it's betrayal of our country by individuals, some of them in government, some of them not, this has got to stop, and people have got to be held accountable for their involvement in such activities, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. I mean, to put a fine point on it, look, we have our number one enemy, I will call them that, on the face of the earth, clearly intent on supplanting us as the dominant power on the planet. We know, as a matter of fact, they have never walked away from the use of biological weapons and have never stopped working on them. We know there is no meaningful distinction between civilian and military institutions in communist China. You can talk about the Wuhan lab. It's got all kinds of military personnel in there, and it belongs to the Chinese Communist Party. So in that context, for a guy like Fauci to be pumping money into that lab to help them develop viruses, take viruses from nature and make them more communicable and more lethal to human beings, I mean, at a minimum, it's madness. And frankly, I would say it is treasonous. It's like, seriously? In the 1980s, if we were pumping money into Moscow to help them figure out, help them work on better nuclear technology, would anybody have any question about the fact that, good God, that is demonstrably dangerous and detrimental to our national security?
Of course not. And the thing that, Sam Faddis, I find particularly, alarming about all of this is, if you think about the Chinese ultimate purpose, and Lawrence Sellin really confirmed this very explicitly, being to destroy the United States as an impediment to their domination of the planet, which is their stated objective, as you know, without actually preventing them from being able to exploit, perhaps even to occupy, this country. Biological warfare has a lot to commend it over, for example, the use of thermonuclear weapons, which would essentially render the place uninhabitable for them as well as obviously for us. So these are considerations which I think your past experience and training and work has further established is part and parcel of what this mortal enemy is up to, and we ignore it at our extreme peril. I don't know how else to say it. This has to be addressed as an urgent national priority, it seems to me, and I hope to make this part of our Committee on the Present Danger China's work program in a very, very big way, and look forward to collaborating with you in doing so. In the meantime, let me just turn to another of the topics that you've been writing about and warning of at andmagazine.com, Sam Faddis, and that is, what the devil is going on at our borders, specifically the southern border, and what is now being done by the Biden administration to exacerbate the invasion that they have, well, essentially invited and seemingly now are increasingly facilitating?
Well, as I think we've said many times, one of the most insidious things that I think that the corporate media does is they just wink stories out of existence. I mean, after you get past the misrepresentations and the spin and the lies, there's this capacity to just sort of erase entire issues. You know, the entire Hunter Biden's laptop comes to mind. Just simply nothing to see here. Move along. We just don't talk about it. The border is a classic example of that. I mean, the border no longer exists in a meaningful sense. On the other side of the border, what we call Mexico, all of that territory is functionally under the control of the cartels. And that doesn't mean that there are gangs there that operate. That means literally the cartels control the territory and function effectively as the government. So you've decided to erase a border, and on the other side, you have a narco state.
And Sam, just take a minute for this, if you would just pause. We hear the term cartel thrown around a lot. I'm not sure most of us understand what they really represent. And you've just introduced the idea that they are effectively governing territory. These are not just run-of-the-mill gangs at this point, are they?
No, and this is, you know, when you talk to folks that are really immersed in this, they typically tend to sort of get their back up if you refer to the cartel as a gang or use the terms interchangeably. Because it's not just a matter of there are a lot of them or they're heavily armed or any of this kind of stuff, which is all true. It is that they do, in fact, function as the government. They own and control all of the institutions of government. They are the government. You do not do anything. You do not move through their territory. You do not conduct business of any kind, legitimate or illegitimate, without their approval. So they literally have taken over the government. So when you talk about, think about how we have simply effectively erased the border and anybody can move across there. Well, the folks that are moving across what used to be the border into the United States are not doing so because the cartel lets them. They are being moved by the cartel. They are paying the cartel. It is the cartel that moves these people through their territory to the border, pushes them across to the point where now different cartels literally banned the people that they'd moved. They put these wristbands on them like you might get at an amusement park to show which cartel is moving them, whether they've paid, where they're going. They have so many people moving that they've had to introduce this system just to keep track of the masses of people they're moving. So anybody who has a vision in their head of just some Central American family that has wandered their way up to the border and is now just wading across the river doesn't understand that this is a giant human trafficking network being done by the same people who at the exact same time are pumping fentanyl and everything else into our country. Now, obviously,
to murderous effect, let us emphasize. And Sam, just on that point, human trafficking is a term that, again, I think seems to be, well, a little bit opaque. It's human slave trading, is it not, as you've described it at AND?
Yeah, it is absolutely. I mean, these people, that is exactly what's happening. And a lot of these folks, when they arrive in the United States, even if they weren't, I mean, obviously, amongst in this flow, which includes drugs and people and who knows what else could be weapons of mass destruction, in this flow are people who are being brought here specifically for sex trafficking purposes, for instance. But even if you're just coming here and have paid them whatever amount of money, a very large portion of these folks arrive in the country in debt. They haven't been able to pay the full amount. And so they end up in Chicago and they still owe the cartel.
Well, the cartel, and give us a sense of how much the debt would be.
Could easily be $20,000. So they could be now in Chicago and working at some menial job. And now they owe the cartel this money at exorbitant interest rates. And the cartel obviously has the capacity to reach out and touch them. So they are literally owned by the cartel. And if you don't pay, you may suffer the consequences, or it may be your grandmother back in wherever who suffers the consequences. But these folks arrive and they are still owned and controlled. So it's absolutely a slave trade.
And it will take, in some cases, years, assuming they survive what they're put through, to pay that kind of money back, would it not?
Yep, absolutely. Many years.
This brings us to two things that I wanted you to cover. A woman who is not a household name, but should be, Lorene Powell Jobs, and what she is doing in all of this, and what the Biden administration is now doing to, facilitate, shall we say, this invasion of our country. Well, let's make no mistake about it, folks. That's what it is. So hit those two points quickly, if you would, Sam Pattison.
Well, Jobs is the widow of Steve Jobs of Apple, and I think she's number four or number five richest woman in the country. And she is pumping massive amounts of money into border policy, and her clear position is that there shouldn't be a border. And at this point, the folks that are sitting inside the Biden White House that are making the policy on the border are coming directly out of her organization. So effectively, we have this lady with vast, vast sums of money who has been for some time saying, there shouldn't be a border, a wall is immoral, all of these things. And now her organization called the Emerson Collective is the entity that is supplying the personnel who are making our policy on the border. The Biden administration, something that the Biden administration or that an average American doesn't understand at all about the Biden administration is that it's not just that they've erased the border and they've now shut down workplace enforcement. They actually have a program they're actually providing a very substantial sum of money, hundreds of millions of dollars, that are going south into Central America to support what they call controlled flow. So immigrants, the migrants, illegal immigrants, end up large numbers of them in Colombia, and they sort of pool up there. And the Colombian government then kind of lets them in managed groups cross the border into Panama, and Panama moves them north through a whole series of camps and then passes them off to Costa Rica and so forth and so on. They're not stopping them. The governments are maintaining camps and assisting them in moving. They are actively moving these folks and shoving them north. And the U.S. government is actually providing a large portion of the funding to support the camps in this process. So we are literally paying to help move these people north. And in fact, the Department of State doesn't hide this, and they've issued a whole series of statements about it. And they say explicitly that it is now the policy of the United States government to try to ensure, I think they refer to it as orderly and safe, orderly and humane migration. So it is now the official policy of the United States not to stop them, but to help them in a safer, more orderly, sustainable way continue to make it across our border. So it's not just that we're not stopping them at the border. We are actively spending taxpayer dollars to help them get to the border in the first place.
And Sam, it's perfectly obvious what the answer is, but to state it, what are the chances this will incentivize more people to make the trip?
Well, I mean, 100%. And we should also just, to throw another exclamation mark on here, just this is no longer, not that it really hasn't been for a long time, but particularly now, this is no longer a question of folks coming from Central America to the border, although there obviously are still Central Americans coming. When I start talking about these people pooling up in Colombia, which is South America, it's obvious that the people that are pooling up in Colombia are not coming from Guatemala north of there. These folks are all people that are coming from elsewhere. Some of them are Haitians. Some of them are Chinese. In fact, there are so many Chinese coming across the border that these placards that the Border Patrol has put out in the desert telling you if you need rescue, call 911. They were originally these signs they stuck out in the desert. This is for illegal immigrants. And they were initially only in English and Spanish. They are now in English, Spanish, and Chinese. That's how many. So, I mean, folks,
what could possibly go wrong? So,
well, you have invited the entire planet. And obviously, I mean, there's just the issue of abandoning our entire legal immigration system, regardless of why they're coming here. But since you have no idea who these people are and you're not controlling their movement, there is, of course, in addition to all the questions of just managing immigration in general, there's the issues. There are the issues of, okay, who else is coming? What are they bringing with them? How many of them are terrorists? How many of them could, in fact, be, we're back to talking biological warfare, how many of them were deliberately infected with a biological agent, which is communicable, before they were fed into this stream as effectively biological, you know, suicide bombers? What, anything is possible now because we are not only not controlling it, we are actually funding the movement of illegals into this country.
Instead of enforcing the law with respect to immigration, for example, Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States, has set his sights on beginning investigations and ultimately prosecuting so-called domestic terrorists, by which he has explicitly meant, among others, parents in school board meetings. He was rather roundly criticized for this recently in congressional testimony. But I just, as a man who's devoted his life to protecting our country against actual terrorists, what do you make, Sam Faddis, of how people who are law-abiding citizens of the United States practicing their First Amendment freedoms, among other things, to complain to school boards about what kind of indoctrination is being foisted upon their children in public schools as domestic terrorists? And what are the implications of doing that?
Well, I find the whole thing, frankly, obscene. It's obviously part and parcel of this broader initiative by the Biden administration, which is to silence all dissent and weaponize intelligence and law enforcement to crush all dissent. I mean, this is going back to conversations we've had previously. They've been very explicit about this. If you say something that the Biden administration claims is brands as disinformation, which is defined explicitly as anything contrary to the facts they consider to be agreed upon, you are, in their mind, therefore the equivalent of domestic violent extremists. So if I'm saying something they say is not true, then I am this is explicit, I am encouraging violence. So even though I'm not undertaking any violence, talking about violence, advocating violence, the mere fact that I utter what they consider a falsehood equals
disinformation.
I am a domestic violent extremist. I am, yes, at disinformation. And they define it as agreed upon set of facts, but they don't mean agreed upon. They mean state sanctioned, Biden's approved narrative. Their facts. If you say something, and this is explicit, if you say something that they disagree with, you are encouraging extremism. You are the equivalent of an extremist. One of the many things that we're involved with, say we at AM Magazine and other groups I'm involved with, is in fact school board initiatives in the state of Pennsylvania. I've been to a lot of these meetings. I've seen a lot of angry parents. I've never seen anybody come within 10 miles of advocating violence, threatening violence. There is no such phenomenon going on. There are a lot of parents wanting to know, well, why are you sticking a mask on my kid? Why are you teaching my white kid that the color of his skin means he's a racist and an evil person? Why are you dividing us? A lot of questions like that. Nobody talking about throwing bombs or hurting anyone. It's all, you know, it's another lie to stifle dissent.
Well, and to go after enemies of the regime as they perceive them. You know, it's been recommended to me that this Let's Go Brandon initiative that sort of spontaneously arose. Of course, it actually involves different wording, but that's how it's being characterized by, among others, NBC News. Could be adapted maybe as early as college games this weekend to Let's Go Garland instead. It seems he's equally deserving of the treatment. Sam Faddis, we have to leave it at that. I'd hope to talk with you about Barack Obama's shouting out that the GOP, the Republicans, are trying to rig elections. He's not the only one on the Democratic side of the aisle, of course, doing that, and they're promoting all kinds of legislative initiatives at the national level to try to prevent anybody but them from rigging elections. But that will be for next week, and we look forward to our visit with you then. In the meantime, thank you, Sam Faddis, for all of your service to our country, but not least that you're rendering these days at mmagazine.com and by your appearances on programs like this. We appreciate it so much. God bless you, my friend. Next up, we will speak with former Virginia State Senator Dick Black about this enemy within problem, how it is manifesting itself, and what he's doing to try to counter it. Then and more, straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank
Gaffney. Welcome back, and it is a distinct pleasure as well as privilege to be able to welcome, I believe, for the first time to our microphones, a man I had greatly admired. I was one of his constituents, as a matter of fact, in Loudoun County, Virginia, when he was representing it in the State Senate of the Commonwealth. He is now retired from that position, alas, but staying very actively engaged on a number of fronts that we follow closely here at Secure Freedom Radio. And so it's a great pleasure, as I say, as well as privilege, to welcome Senator Dick Black to these microphones and to talk with our audience about both some of the work that he's done in the past and most especially that he is about at the moment. Senator, it's good to have you with us. Welcome. Thank you for all of your service to our country in the uniform of the United States Marines back in Vietnam, where you served in combat, flying helicopters as one of the youngest aircraft carrier qualified pilots in the Marines at the time, and that you did during your time of work in the legislature of our great Commonwealth, and for that you're doing now. It's good to have a chance to visit with you and catch up a bit.
Well, Frank, it's a delight to be with you, and look forward to talking a little bit.
Me too. Let's start in on something that I came to realize was your present principal preoccupation, which is very exciting to me, through the profile that was done of you in a great newspaper, the Epoch Times, recently. And that is a focus on what I think of as a Marxist revolution now underway in our country. How do you characterize it, and what worries you most about it?
Well, you know what's happened. You go back to the 30s, we've always had a communist element within the country. But what has happened, it has just exploded recently because they're always looking for a fissure where they can, pit the workers against the bourgeoisie and this kind of thing. Well, in this country, they have tried to pry at the scab of racial differences. And they have recently been very successful. And I was shocked. It's been really just after Trump was elected. They did a sort of a counter rally after Trump had his big inauguration rally. And I was absolutely stunned that to see photographs of it, because all throughout the entire rally were big communist flags, hammer and sickle, and socialist this, communist that. It wasn't just one or a couple of isolated things. It was like a wave of something you might have seen during the in Moscow or with the Red Guards parading through, beating people up. It's just crazy. So And what they have done is...
It's what in the intelligence business center do they call a clue.
Yes, it's a big clue. It's a very big clue. And so what they're doing now is they have instituted this critical race theory, and it's being taught all over the country. If your local schools claim they're not teaching it, they're teaching it. It is everywhere. And basically what it does is it teaches the students to hate the white kids who are in their class, to teach that they're privileged, that they've done all of these things. And it's basically designed to encourage the children to bully and hate those children. It's just sort of the absolute reverse of what we've tried to do for the last 50 years to try to create an atmosphere of harmony.
It's another form of
so
racism.
It's very dangerous. I tell you, you know, I grew up, I attended schools that were segregated down in Florida, and I was opposed to segregation. I felt like there were things that were unfair that were being done to some of our black neighbors. And anyway, but I will tell you that never in segregated schools in Florida, never would anyone have dared to speak out against a particular race and to say, well, this race is bad, this race is wicked, this kind of, it would have stunned
an older group just because of the color of their skin, right? I mean, it's a genetic thing.
And I'm talking about under segregation. People would have just been aghast if somebody had gone on a diatribe against black students. And
well, certainly
so
making
what
it
we've
part
got
of
right
the
now,
curriculum of the schools. I mean, that you might have the odd racist out there for sure, but we're talking about a formal pedagogic program that is built upon racism. In this case, reversing the racism that was a feature in the past. But let me just ask you, Dick, because we're going to come to this in particular in the context of Virginia and the election that's looming now next week in just a moment. But just staying with this theme of what is, in fact, as a remarkable woman I've had the privilege of interviewing put it the other day, she appeared prominently in a Loudoun County school board meeting, G. Van Fleet, that this critical race theory, I call it communist racist training program, is really right out of the playbook, according to her, of Mao's Cultural Revolution. And as you said about the flags and, you know, the character of some of these folks promoting all this, would it be accurate in your view to describe what is going on here as a Marxist revolution?
Yes, it is a Marxist revolution. The goal is to bring about a very violent revolution with the slaughter of people. Now, Xi Van Fleet she's a wonderful woman. I know her. In fact, I saw her the other evening. She's very bright, very intellectual, and I don't think she was particularly political, but she's looking. She fled communist China back during the Cultural Revolution with Mao Zedong. And so she knows it. And so she's terribly distraught because she sees it emerging here in the United States, where you see the BLM and the Antifa are very much like the Red Guards were in China, where they chase and beat people, they burn down buildings, they assassinate police and this kind of thing. And so she sees it. She's been there and done that. So it's a very, very major concern for me. I've seen communism. I saw it emerge in Cuba, where you took one of the finest countries, most joyous countries in the world, and turned it into a pit. I saw it in Vietnam, where, I was flying in with his helicopter and the other pilot, he's sitting on the side next to the Hamlet that we were resupplying. And he looks and he says, oh, he says, geez, he says, Everybody down there has been killed. He says all the women, the children, all their heads are stuck on bamboo poles. He said he just, you know, turned his stomach. And so
by
then
the Viet
I thought,
Cong, I take it.
Yeah, by the Viet Cong. Yes, communist. And then I saw it again in East Berlin during the Cold War. I was stationed over there and we went. And you could just sense that the atmosphere of fear and terror. And we took
under
our
pressure.
Small children when we came back after that weekend that we spent down there. It was reported on the news that there was a West German man who went to the fence and he spoke to his East German brother through the fence at one of these stops. Just he hadn't spoken to him in many years and just said hello. And the next thing, the communist took his brother out and executed him. Just for having a conversation with his brother. So it's that kind of terror, and we're beginning to see this emerge throughout our country.
This is what's so troubling is that, you know, there's a lot of talk, of course, on the part of Marxists, progressives and socialists and all whatever banner they fly under, that this is all about equity and this is all about, you know, providing a more fair distribution of resources and so on. And the truth of the matter is as your own personal experience, Dick Black attests, there is no way you can accomplish the kind of fundamental transformation of countries like ours, freedom-loving countries and people like ours, without violent oppression. And you certainly can't sustain it over time without terror, as you say, and gulags and, you know, arbitrary executions and all the rest. And I think you're absolutely right, sir, if I may say, to be concerned about this. And I know one of the things that you're focused on, and I commend you for all of this, is this whole idea of vaccine mandates and, you know, sort of the passports that are the enforcement mechanism for it. And just tying this back to our previous topic, are you worried, as am I, that this is about basically power rather than public health, and that those vaccine passports will inevitably be morphed into something akin to the social credit system of China?
Absolutely. The passports are designed to sort of get a grip on every individual in the country. To where, if you don't have a vaccine passport, somewhere in Europe, it may be Germany, I'm not sure, but anyway, they're prohibiting people from shopping for groceries if they don't have the vaccine. Well, if you can't, you know, if you can't eat, you can't live. I think the time will come where, as they control everything through the banking system, the Democrats in Congress are trying to control every transaction down to $600. And what they want to be able to do is
surveil them.
Yes, or to say, and this it always goes one step at a time. But once they have total transparency into your financial affairs, then the idea is to say, okay, we are going to cut off your access to banking, so that you can't pay your electric bill, you can't pay your mortgage, you're out on the street, you can't buy food, and so that
That's
they will
the
have an iron
system.
Grip.
Yeah, exactly.
Iron grip on everyone.
So,
and,
Dick,
you know,
I want to come to the Virginia political situation and the threat, perhaps, to a free and fair election in Virginia in just a second. But before we do, just to wrap up this first topic, I have come to the conclusion, and I wonder what you would say about this. Some describe what the Biden team is up to as incompetence, certainly malfeasance. But I personally believe what's going on is a wrecking operation against our country, against our constitutional republic, and ultimately, of course, against our people and their freedoms. Would you, based on your firsthand exposure to and you know, very unhappy experience with communism in the past, agree that that's really what these Marxist revolutionaries inside the Biden-Harris administration, as well as their friends on Capitol Hill and elsewhere, are up to?
Yes, I think this is a very determined plan. Now, I don't, you know, Biden, I don't know how much he is setting the tone for things, but the people that he's surrounded himself with are very, very hard leftists. They have been part of this movement for a long time. The fact that they have opened the southern border to swarms of third world immigrants who are coming here to immediately go on the welfare system and be paid to stay at home, be given everything for free, be paid to have babies to go on welfare and so forth. Clearly, that's designed to wreck the stability of the country, to create a sense of disunity, to where we're just sort of a Tower of Babel, and people don't even know what an American is anymore.
And certainly to transform the electorate of this country, too.
Yes, that's part of it. And so you take people from Haiti and you send them to Florida, you send them to places where they can tip the electoral balance. That's the objective. At the same time, we see this massive printing of money and the attempt to promote inflation. And you know, here we are. They're talking about, well, we're going to print $6 trillion. Well, maybe we'll only print $2 or $3 trillion.
Oh, phew. That's a great thing.
Has his way. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wonderful. And of course, it's all debt money. It's all fiat, unbacked currency. And here we are. We're at a time of surging, enormous inflation taking place. And there is no unemployment. Basically, we've got huge numbers of jobs that are going begging. So it's not like you can say, well, we've got to pump up the money so that we can get people employed. No,
it's
just we're going to print money to devalue the dollar. And this is something Lenin talked about. It. He said, we will grind the bourgeoisie, which is the middle class, between the millstones of taxation and inflation. And so they study this stuff. They know what they're doing. They want to devalue the dollar to create inflation. My wife was at McDonald's yesterday, and a fish sandwich that would have been a couple bucks not long ago is $7.39 today. For a simple, that's the little fish on a bun. And if you're working poor, if you're doing lawns or you're making beds in hotels or whatever, you eat at cheap places because that's where you can save money. Those are the people who get hurt the worst. Is the working
it's
poor.
It's not just the middle class. That's exactly right. Senator Dick Black is our guest. This is actually a perfect segue into one of the most important elections in the country that is underway at the moment. You, as a very longtime and successful politician, I know, are both following closely what's happening in the Commonwealth of Virginia, with particularly the governor's race, but also the race to populate the next state legislature. Give us your readout as to where things stand at the moment.
Right now, the Democrat candidate, McAuliffe, very, very close confidant of Bill and Hillary Clinton, he is promoting a theme of keeping parents out of school business, making sure that they don't interfere with the books that are being disseminated, making sure that they have no influence over critical race theory. He claims there is no such thing as critical race theory, but when he was the governor before, he ordered all schools to implement critical race theory. So it's everywhere. And this is a guy who, you know, he's known for encouraging racial violence, for trying to disarm the police, free murderers and rapists from prison. And, you know, we've got this transgender indoctrination and the grooming of children in the schools. He's big on mandates. His campaign theme is something like Virginia is for vaccine lovers. That's what he says. For vaccine lovers. And, you know, he's big on lockdowns of business and this kind of thing. The Democrats are absolutely reeling because nothing is going their way. They tried to get the National School Boards Association. The School Boards Association actually did communicate with the Attorney General and with the President.
Merrick Garland.
And they got the Attorney General to send the FBI down as kind of a secret police to infiltrate school board meetings and to sort of put a chill, creates a sense of fear. But it isn't working because people are just on fire all over. They're challenging these school boards. And yes, the parents. The parents are sometimes their children who testify at these things. And they're against the transgender indoctrination. They want to be involved in schools. And, you know, Terry McAuliffe, something that he did when he was the governor, there was a bill I was involved with, and it would have required that whenever schools are going to require their students to study sexually explicit materials, that they inform the parents and the parents have an opt-out procedure. That passed the House and the Senate, strong bipartisan vote, and it went to Terry McAuliffe, and he vetoed it. And he said, and this is a quote, "I veto House Bill 516, which would require schools to identify materials as sexually explicit and notify parents if teachers plan to provide instructional material containing such content." That's a quote from him, the guy who's running as the Democrat for governor. And I'll tell you, people are outraged. They are rising up all over the state of Virginia. This isn't something that's driven by the Republican National Committee. It's something that's just, a lot of these people were never Republicans before. Some of them were Democrats or independents, and they're just furious at the Democrats.
But I'm hearing, Senator Black, that in Fairfax County in particular, there are concerted efforts underway to steal this election. Including a colleague of ours, John Mills, has warned that poll books, as they're called, have got back doors that can be manipulated to reflect voters, participation in the election, for example, or non-participation, as the case may be. Are you concerned, sir, based on what we saw in the 2020 election, perhaps Virginia, but certainly elsewhere, that is disenfranchising voters in this cycle, or will?
Yes, we know that there has always been considerable voter fraud in Virginia. Some years ago, there was an incident where the son of a very prominent Democrat congressman was caught on tape explaining to an activist how you could cheat and how you could falsify identity, and they sort of swept it under the rug. But the United States has a long storied history of voter fraud, going back to Huey Long and then Lyndon Johnson with John F. Kennedy versus Nixon, even the presidential race. So it's, and of course, what happened during the Trump election was just such a transparent case of voter fraud on probably the greatest scale in human history. And so, yes, it is a concern. The Republicans are watching very closely because everybody is suspicious of voter fraud. And so there's been a tremendous amount of attention. People are watching the polls very closely. But of course, we know that as long as we have these machines connected to the internet, that they will be tampered with. And it's not a question of whether there will be voter fraud. It's a question of whether the Democrats will be able to commit enough voter fraud to throw the election.
This is a nonpartisan program, but let me just say, it is incumbent on everybody who legally can vote in Virginia to do so. And I hope that will ultimately prevent voter fraud from affecting the outcome. But we appreciate Senator Richard Black, Dick Black, your lifetime of service to our country and to the state of Virginia, and appreciate very much the chance to visit with you today. And I hope we'll have a chance to do so again in the near future, perhaps in the aftermath of the election, to get a sense of what has in fact transpired. But thank you again for joining us, and for the remarkable public servant that you are, and Godspeed in that work. I hope the rest of you have enjoyed these conversations today, and I hope that you'll join us again on Monday, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Millions of Americans will soon be gathering in football stadiums, NASCAR races, and other venues across the country to cheer on their favorites. If recent experience is any guide, many of them may also express their profound displeasure with President Joe Biden shouting an obscene phrase an NBC reporter hilariously transformed into, "Let's go, Brandon!" While they're at it, these crowds might add a new chant to their repertoire. Attorney General Merrick Garland deserves critical attention, too, for insisting that school board meeting attending mothers and fathers are, quote, potential domestic terrorists, unquote, and for sicking on them FBI investigators and Justice Department prosecutors. So, if you're heading to a public event this weekend, consider starting or joining a denunciation of America's top law enforcement officer who is weaponizing our security agencies against us. How about urging President Biden to let go Garland? This is Frank Affney.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
October 29th, 1929. The stock market crashed and America plunged into the Great Depression. President Herbert Hoover, in a nationwide drive to aid the private relief agencies, stated, "Time and time again, the American people have demonstrated a spiritual quality of generosity. This civilization, which we call American life, is builded and can alone survive upon the translation into individual action of that fundamental philosophy announced by the Savior 19 centuries ago. Modern society cannot survive with the defense of Cain. Am I my brother's keeper?"
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.